Hello everyone, welcome to the TechMinds Africa podcast. My name is Oluwanifemi Kolawole, and in the studio with me today is Bolu and Chimgozin. We have a few things to talk about today, and these conversations are going to cut across Africa. There's Kenya, there's Egypt, and there is Rwanda. We're going to start with this interesting story of another African country promising that in a few years, they're also going to adopt CBDC. Well, we are going to discuss it today, and it's a question of those that tried it and it didn't work out, what are you going to do differently? Then we'll move from there to a big merger and acquisition or merger that the African tech ecosystem has been looking forward to for a few months now that has been stalling. So I think we should just get into the conversation. Let's start with Rwanda and big moves.
Yeah.
Rwanda promised that by 2026, it will be launching its CBDC, which looks like it was like it's like good news to the international space. That another African country wants to make big moves. So, we remember Nigeria, our dear Nigeria,
yep.
And their move. And this is 2 years after, and we are barely.
It's 3 years after, actually.
It's three years.
It's 2021.
It will be 3 years in December.
No, in October.
In October.
October this year.
Yes, almost 3 years now, and we are still praying to God. But what will Rwanda get right here? We still have 2 years before the launch. So, Bolu, how has digital currency fared in Africa? In African countries that wanted to launch it?
In Africa, outside Africa, they have not fared well.
Okay.
Central bank digital currencies, CBDCs. So, CBDCs, I think, they are not something that is exact. They are not new per se, right? CBDCs go as far back as I think 1980s or even before then, right? But they became popular in, I think, 2019, 2020. People started talking about it a lot more. And, you know, cryptocurrencies were already popular at that time, and it was kind of like a way for governments to also get in on that cryptocurrency action, you know, launching their own digital currencies that also run on the blockchain. Sounded very interesting, sounded promising, but as of now, I mean, according to BIS, that is like a global central bank, basically. So we've had a lot of countries that have discussed or talked about the possibility of launching their own CBDC. But till date, we only have three countries that have actually launched a CBDC. Nigeria.
And it's active.
Yes, that is. I mean, active. That's
on paper. let's
hard
work
to.
With that.
Yeah. So it works. That works.
Okay.
I think that's a way to. Active means, I don't know. I think active means, who are the people? Are there people using it? That works. Yes. We have three countries that have actually launched it. We have 36 countries that are in pilot phase, and we have 30 that are still developing their own.
Which countries have launched?
Just three. That would be Nigeria, Ecuador, and Senegal.
In Africa?
Yeah. Globally.
Globally.
Two is in Africa.
Interesting. Well, I'm proud.
Well, I mean, you can be proud. You can be proud, but
Kim was even just coughed.
Like I said, they've not fared well. Whether it has launched in research phase, in development phase, we've not really seen CBDCs do change anything, really. And I think that problem stems from the fact that they are not entirely necessary. They are only necessary for one thing.
Okay.
Right? Which is cross-border payments, if you ask me.
Okay.
But the only way that will work is if we have a central hub, right? Or should I say a central decentralized hub for different countries' central bank digital currencies to work together. Right? So if Nigeria is launching a CBDC, Brazil is launching a CBDC.
We are going far. Let's just start with maybe West Africa, East Africa, North Africa.
Yeah, even at that, it will not be cross-border. Yes, it will work within West Africa. But what if you want to send money to someone in Kenya? Because it is what we have now is no different from fiat. The normal fiat currencies. It's no different from me having, because right now I have Naira in my wallet, right? But does not mean that I can only use it within Nigeria. It does not mean that I can now send that Naira, because someone in Rwanda, for example, cannot open an Naira wallet because they are not Nigerian, right? Which is one of the
challenge that is limiting.
Yes, because if you look at it, they don't really solve anything. They're not really solving a problem.
So what problems should be solved before CBDC?
Cryptocurrencies are solving a very clear problem.
So why can't CBDC solve the problem?
Look at it this way. I have USDT in my wallet. I can send it to someone in the US right now, as long as they have a wallet. I have Naira in my wallet. Can't send it to any other person if they are not in Nigeria. Even if they are in Nigeria and they don't register and open an Naira wallet, I can't send it to them. But right now, right here, I can send $20 to anybody in any part of the world as long as they have an internet connection using cryptocurrency, using a stable coin or any other cryptocurrency, basically.
That they are not solving the problem.
So that's the question. So it is yet to ask that what has to be in place, what has to be solved, what problem has to be solved for CBDCs to take off anywhere in the world.
The IMF, I think in 2021 or 2022, they proposed the same thing I said, where there has to be like something central. So say for example, we have like a central blockchain, right, that can now accommodate different currencies. For example, the same way we have something like we have the Binance Smart Chain, for example, right? And on this smart chain, you can have different currencies that can work on it. For example, I can have USDT work on it. I can have an euro-based stable coin work on it. If we have something like that, right, then we can now see that interoperability between different countries, and we can now see that level of cross-border payments that it will transform global payments, actually, if that happens. So I think the IMF proposed something like that. But the thing with that now is, who controls this? What we've noticed with CBDCs, what we noticed with countries that have launched CBDCs, Nigeria, for example, is they still want to have a level of control. They don't want that public, because it's different with public blockchains. That's why it's easier with public blockchains. That's why I can send money to anybody. But Nigeria, for example, wants a private blockchain where they have some element of control, right? Where they can also have access to, okay, who is sending what? What are they sending? They want things like that.
And but that kills this decentralized.
It's not even decentralized, which is another reason why it is not different from what we already have.
From fiat.
Yes, it's not really different. So if we are now going to have that decentralized one, it's now the question of, okay, who is even going to create it? Who will be in that? Who will be in control of it, right? So for now, I mean, I stand to be corrected if anybody has any opposing ideas, but for now, I really do not see the use case for CBDCs. I don't really see how they will.
Have you written an article about that?
Mainly just for Nigeria, basically.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, CBDCs for each country, right?
Works, but
kind of makes sense, right? Because in a way, if you use Naira, for example, in Nigeria, there's a possibility that because it's even though it's still a private blockchain, it will still be faster because it's connected, right? It's not GTB to access, or it's just one Naira on that same network. So it's going to be extremely fast and it's going to be very cheap, right? So within a country, it makes sense. It can actually work.
But this is supposed to like solve.
Yes, because yes. But I think there's something they call wholesale CBDCs. I think there might be a room for CBDCs to actually solve that problem if Well, because wholesale CBDCs will just mean it will not be me and you using them. It will just be really big companies, really big banks that need to send money to each other using CBDCs. Mm. So yeah, I don't want to waste our time going deeper into that and how that can work. So basically,
Rwanda's projection for 2026 is possible that they just launch it and it will be like within the country that it will be effective.
So one of their own proposals too is cross border, and they've not really showed us anything
how
it's going to work differently, because yes, we already have three countries that have launched this thing and the cross border promises are not there, right? So we should give Rwanda a chance. Maybe they might be the ones that will change everything and every other country will start learning
Rwanda
from.
Rwanda PR, but they seem to get a lot of things right.
It's arguable.
Okay. Thanks, Bolu, for giving us an exposition on that. And we'll look forward, and before then too, I'm sure other countries, at least some are in pipe, like over 36 are in pilot phase. So a lot of things can happen before then. So we'll look out for that, and yes, we'll feed you back, our audience. So let's move from there to another story. And this is one of the most anticipated merger in the African tech ecosystem between two B2B e-commerce companies, Wasoko and Max AB. Well, it got out. News about the merger got out in December 2023. But gut feeling tells me that it has been going on for far longer before then. But yeah, let's work with December 2023. And what was projected was that it will be concluded by the end of Q1 2024, that was March. Now we are moving closer to the end of Q2 2024, and they are still experiencing some snag. And we want to discuss some of the things surrounding these delays. At some point, it was employees. No, I don't know whether this contributed to it, but employees at Wasoko were complaining that they were not informed that a merger was going to happen, which was going to affect their jobs. They feel they should have been informed. And then from there were conversations around ownership, who will own so percentage. It was initially agreed that Wasoko will own, being the biggest of the two, based on valuation, being the biggest of the two, Wasoko was going to own like 55%, while Max AB would own 45%. And yes, Wasoko operates in more markets. It has a larger coverage in East Africa. Meanwhile, Max AB is large in Egypt and Morocco. But yeah, there are a lot of things surrounding the delays. Yes, typically delays of mergers of this size, of this magnitude, should take between 6 to 9 months, right? But they projected it that it's going to take them 3 months, which is that it will be concluded by the end of March 2024, which makes me believe that the process has been on long before that, probably June, July of 2023. Let's just talk about how long this delay might take, looking at the circumstances surrounding it. We talk about the socioeconomic circumstances, the valuation of currencies in the market that they are playing in, is going to affect how the worth of these companies. So let's just talk about other things that might still come up that might delay this merger to be longer than we've already experienced. So Shim Gozirim, be our guest.
Yeah, I'm already your guest.
Can you just ignore that I said be your guest? I just move on from there. Why did you have to point that out?
Okay. it's difficult to give a timeline
okay.
for this, and I don't know, even the people working on the deal can probably just give you an estimated timeline. But like you said, I don't really see this as a big deal, that the there are delays. It's just natural. Mm-hmm. So I think these delays are coming from due diligence being done by both parties. I think that's the biggest issue here. Due diligence is being done, and typically it can take as much as 6 months for the due diligence to be
Does
done.
The fact that this merger was is being what's the English? That is large involvement of that's driven is the word I'm looking for. Does it count? Does it account for this delay that it is driven by investors? Does it
yes and no.
add anything? Okay.
So no, because the investors are probably the ones that got both parties to the table.
Okay.
To facilitate this merger.
Okay.
And
they have big investors, Tiger Global, 4DX.
Yeah, so the thing is, I think it's 4DX that 4DX are the ones driving the conversation, but I think they've also stepped aside as well, because they have like vested interest in both parties.
Mm-hmm.
So they've kind of stepped aside from that. So yes, it's possible that I said no first. Yeah, no, because investors are driving it, so naturally it would be easier.
Okay.
You have investments in both parties in both companies, and you probably don't want to screw each other over. So that helps.
Especially when it comes to ownership.
Ownership, everything actually. You are, either way, you are still going to be
probably lose part of your shares. And
yeah, I mean, whether it's losing part of the shares, is a case of, oh, okay, I want to facilitate a marriage between my best friend and my sister. I'm actually invested in the success of that,
yeah,
because it's reflects on me. I could lose a best friend if the marriage doesn't work out, or I could also lose a sister.
Your sister.
Yeah,
so there's a possibility that the merger might not happen as well.
I'm coming. So there's that aspect that the investors being involved would sort of help to smoothen things over, okay, even if you did not want it. Question here now is, when the merger was proposed, because typically, now we don't know the full picture, but it's very possible that there's one party that was in a stronger position at the time the merger was mooted.
Mm-hmm.
Because if anything has
the
changed,
circumstances surrounding mergers are usually one person trying to survive or two of them trying to survive.
Yeah, so there probably was one person who was in a stronger position.
Mm-hmm.
If anything has changed, then one party, the person who is now, it now depends on like how much has your position shifted. So if, for example, you had leverage, and let's say putting percentages, if your leverage was like 40% and the other person had 50, you may go ahead with it.
Yeah.
But now if your leverage for some reason has gone from that 40% to like, let's say 70%, is huge. So the power balance kind of shifts. So to the other question, yes, investor involvement could also stop this from happening.
From proceeding.
Because investor involvement can also be one reason why this does not proceed. And so on one hand, yes, you want this to, like, you're bringing both parties to the table, but if, I don't know what the initial reaction was.
Mm-hmm.
We are both parties very excited about it, or at least willing. You don't need to be showing excited interest, but like, are you willing to go ahead with it?
Mm-hmm.
If one party wasn't willing, then it's very possible. But back to what I was saying earlier, I think the biggest problem here is due diligence. You have to conduct due diligence regardless of who's facilitating the merger. A deal of this magnitude has to be, you need to do due diligence, and sometimes you don't know how long this will take. You could find some things that you don't exactly like, or things that you need more clarity on. I think those are some of the reasons. I really don't think the fact that employees are upset
can't
is going
stop
to,
it
can't stop this deal.
Yes, it
can. The best it can do is maybe if they can file a frivolous lawsuit and then maybe just gives them one more thing to worry about. But it's highly unlikely that it is a factor in this. So it's either an issue that was discovered during due diligence, or maybe one party just decides, you know what, maybe I'm not exactly keen on this. And I mean, Wasoko has had their valuation marked down. So yeah. You said they were going to have like a 55% split. I don't know when that decision was made. If it was made before it was revealed that the valuation was marked down. So the valuation, the marking down took place Q3 2023. Definitely, or most likely before talks started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in that case, it probably doesn't have a lot. It doesn't really have like any bearing on this. But if it did not, if it was something that, let's say Max was unaware of until the merger process had started, it could shift or change the balance of things.
I noticed you didn't mention like regulatory, right? Although it's arguable, but these two companies are big in their own sense.
Regulatory.
So, and they have like so much influence on East Africa and MENA region when it comes to e-commerce.
Yes, I don't know about influence, but yes, and this is the reason why I don't think it's a big deal or may not be a big deal. They are not in a tightly regulated space. If this was fintech, then maybe a regulator is somewhere thinking of what to spring like on them.
Trying to prevent a monopoly.
Yeah. They are, it's highly unlikely. So if this was a case of, okay, Max was, let's say, valued at 600 million, let's say, currently serving like, maybe serving 600,000 retailers or something like that. And then these other guys
currently, coming together of both of them would make them to be able to serve 50,000, like 50,000.
Yeah, so and I don't think it's not big enough. The scale of the operation is not that big to warrant.
It's not like a Figma, Adobe.
Yeah, so I don't think regulatory, one, because there's really no clear regulation in the e-commerce space. It's not like fintech where there's someone that is watching your moves. And then they're in two different countries. Right. So
regions. Let's use regions.
Well, I mean, Wasoko is scaling down operations significantly. They've scaled down operations significantly in the last 1 year. Max AB hasn't done a lot of that because I think they were just
in two
countries. So okay, fine. Their main operations are in two countries, Egypt, Kenya.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's very unlikely that regulatory issues holds this up. But you never can tell. Someone can wake up and decide that I don't like where this is going. There's really no clear monopoly really in any e-commerce market in Africa. There's no one who has a clear monopoly. So in Nigeria, Jumia doesn't have a clear monopoly of the e-commerce market. You're probably competing with Instagram vendors. So there's no, for real, you're competing with Instagram vendors. Everyone these days has a shop on Instagram.
Yeah.
So those are your competitors. So do you really have a monopoly? I don't know.
Yeah. I think before we move from there, there was this issue that was raised backstage about how the two companies might not be doing too well. And a merger might not be able to save them. Yeah, it sounds far-reaching in a way, but when talks of merger and acquisition comes and one of them is not like very strong, like visibly very strong, it's obvious. Like when Canal Plus acquired, that was more of an acquisition than merger.
Yes,
Rock Studio.
It has, yeah.
It's more, okay. Yeah. Yes, that's a very weird example. But yes, when merger comes to place, like both of them are trying to survive, and we understand the way
so
African
just,
e-commerce scene.
Let me jump
is.
In a bit. Mergers are not always because you want to survive. It could just be that the sum of the whole is better or bigger than the parts
individually.
Right. So. In this case, it's very likely that both companies want to survive. But what this could do for them is, first is if you have similar businesses, so you're going to be streamlining operations, processes, everything.
Exactly.
So if you had, let's say the both of them had, let's say, 100, 200 employees each. Right now, you can expect at least a 40% to 50% headcount. I mean, not even though that's not literal.
Even though they are operating in different markets.
Yes. So, for example, your engineering team would be reduced because your product is not like high tech.
Yeah.
And yes, how do I explain this? Or what's the word I'm looking for here? Okay, so you have to like localize products. But even at that, I do not need a significantly large team to do that.
Yeah, that's so true. But then you're not talking about the fact that they will be diluting their what each person owns in the businesses.
Yeah, I think those are technicalities that are too easy to work on. Like, it's too easy for you to work on it. All you need to do is agree that this is the current value of my company. Mm-hmm. This is the current value of your company. We are better off together as opposed to separately.
Mm-hmm.
You would usually have like your accountants, your lawyers, everybody working together to make sure that nobody's being screwed over. So it's kind of easy. I don't think that would be an issue for them. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So this one is on my mind because this particular merger, if it becomes successful, it will be considered like the largest in Africa's tech history. Like, I'm wondering what this would mean for the African tech ecosystem if it eventually becomes successful.
Did you want to answer? But I don't think it will do anything for the African tech ecosystem. Not any other major. Of course, it's large, right? Mm-hmm. It's definitely the largest one in e-commerce, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think the ecosystem right now, for us to have something that it will be like a defining moment, I don't think it will make like a defining moment
in Atlantic.
Yes. What we need right now is like another large exit that makes sense, which we might not see for a while because I think the African tech ecosystem, the African economy generally, because the tech ecosystem is in the African economy, things are not working out well so far.
The market is brutal.
Yeah.
Funding market.
So if this had happened a few years ago, maybe
it
would
have been impressive. So Chimbazim doesn't look impressed either. So I think I know his answer, but I don't know why he holds that opinion.
Because not everything really has an impact on the ecosystem. Sometimes, so the African tech ecosystem is pretty large. So two companies who are both what right now, both of them have a valuation of less than 600 million. Mm. When you count Wasoko's markdown, they have a valuation of less than 600 million. That's hardly enough to make me... So your merger, for example, doesn't really make me sit up and take... Where I probably would look at is maybe 6 months down the line after your merger is completed. That's probably something.
Yeah. What about the space they are playing in? Looking at the space that Africa is barely like moving the needle when it comes to e-commerce. The market is...
Everybody's collecting hand. So if you are... You may want to go and listen to the podcast from last week where we sort of talked about the challenges of building an e-commerce product in Africa. But I still do not think it has any bearing on the market. Jumia has divested a lot of their businesses in the last 1 or 2 years. I can't really say we've particularly seen any impact on the ecosystem. It's more of an impact on the two companies. Would you now, maybe as a result of consolidating experiences, consolidating resources, consolidating manpower, would you
become bigger?
Not just bigger, like does your business get... I really don't care how big you are on paper. Like, do you become more sustainable as a business? So you now have two markets. Egypt is big enough. I think Kenya is kind of big enough as well. So now, would they have more firepower to maybe execute on whatever their plans are over the
and
next 1 or 2 years.
More rich.
If, yeah, exactly. If they merge, maybe it might be easier for them as well to raise money from investors. It's one entity right now. So maybe it's also easier. I don't know.
So time will tell. Hopefully this doesn't cross to the third, like the end of the third quarter or the fourth quarter. But whenever it is that they finalize on this merger, we are looking forward to see the kind of impact they will make in the markets they operate in. And that would be it on today's episode of the TechPoint Africa podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening to this and you've been enlightened and educated with what we've discussed today. Don't forget to send us your feedback, rate us or review our podcast if you're listening from Spotify. If you're listening to this on any of our video platforms, don't forget to like. We just want to get feedback from you on how we are doing and where you want us to improve on. We also have our newsletters running, TechPoint Digest, Modern Workplace Newsletter, and Equity Merchant. We'll drop a link in the description. Don't forget to subscribe. Thank you once again for joining us on today's episode. Catch you in the next one.
Speech Friday, don't forget.
Yeah. Speech Friday this Friday.
This is also my way of inviting you to this month's edition of Speech Friday. If you don't know about Speech Friday, we'll drop a short video to explain to you on what Speech Friday is about. We hope to see you. If you catch me or Bulu or Chimgo's dream, just say hi. We'll say hi back. We don't snub people. Thank you very much for joining us once again today. Catch you in the next one. Bye. Bully and she goes in, say bye-bye now.